I would like to begin by first of all saying that our first part of this afternoon, we will be dealing with violence on television. And there are about six things I would like to say in introduction to this. First of all, the persuasiveness of violence on television, and we'll look at that today, how persuasive and almost how covert, or you get so desensitized to seeing violence that after a while you take it as just a matter of a program. The second thing that we're going to be looking at this afternoon is how violence is used as an appropriate way to solve problems. That the only way that we can solve problems is in a violent way. Or, to put it more plainly, that if I disagree with you, the only way that probably we will come to terms is if I shoot you. Or if I get the upper hand. And it's amazing, even on children's cartoons, there are very few children's cartoons on Saturday morning that are violence-free. Most of them have aggression of all types, and I think of one classic one, The Roadrunner. There's always someone being put down. The third thing I'd like to say that we're going to be looking at today is you're going to look at how police and good guys use violent means to solve problems too. So it just isn't the bad guys that use violence, it's the police and it's the good guys. The fourth thing that we're going to look at is the individualistic character of television violence proposes that violence is personal and not symptomatic. And also the fifth area, the creation of fear for personal safety sets the stage for the necessity of strong police and strong military powers. Television violence may perpetuate a willingness to accept coercive power. I think there's no question about that one, that the more news shows you how violent our society is, whether it is or not, there is some question. But at least what you see on television makes everyone afraid to go out at night, or you will be in danger of your life. The sixth thing that we're going to look at as we view our film today is the continuing exposure to massive doses of television violence may lead to what is called a desensitizing process, which allows each of us as individuals and as a society to accept violence as normal rather than abnormal. And here's where we get into the statistic that if you've watched television up to the age of 18, you will have seen between some 13 and 15,000 murders on television. And yet the other day when I asked how many of you witnessed a murder, no hands went up. I have not in any group that I have taught television awareness ever had one hand go up of a person who actually saw someone being murdered. And yet on television, it's every evening. And it's interesting as part of our workbook on television awareness that this particular section, the homework you would do with it, you have to analyze and look at some television shows that deal with violence. And then what you have to do, you have to run a log and see how many aggressive acts, how many murders there are, and surprising, how many go by very fast on each and every evening that we watch television. So now I'd like to take some time and have you have your daily dose of violence for about the next 10 minutes. Violence as TV portrays it. Now the interesting thing before you turn this on is that you're going to see violence in about five different ways here. The first area that you're going to see violence will be violence for violence sake. Then you're going to see tragedy. You're going to see illegal acts by law enforcement agents. You're going to see that on television in the second segment. And this is where, if you notice that once the film is put on the screen, that about after 2 minutes there'll be a blank spot, and then it'll go on again, there'll be another blank spot. I'd like to have you just play a particular mental note to those four or five blank areas, because those are the doses that were taken in. And each one of these doses of violence have a particular thing that we'll be looking at in a little while. So if we could, let's have our television violence. Given us. And each time you or your child sit down in front of the television set, there is a very, very good chance of witnessing a fight, a crime, or even a murder. And the funny thing is about our society here in America so far is that we have grown so accustomed to the world of television that many of us no longer notice how turbulent and unreal that world really is. Now, I don't know, maybe I've lived a sheltered life, but what we've just watched, I have not witnessed any one of those events in real life. Have any of you watched any one of those aggressive acts that you saw on the television screen in real life? In what way? Few hands. The ones that you have your hands up, could you relate to it? Okay. Normally, were you involved in the fist fight, or did you just witness it, or in the pillow fight? But you know, what impact, if any, does televised violence have on real-life society? What can you imagine, having a steady dose of what you've just witnessed, have on our society? Wonder Woman with her, you know, wrists like this, you know, how many fantasize that, you know, can I do that with my wrist like that, you know, and take and flip a fella, you know, 50, 60 feet in the air. Say, TV violence is just entertainment, as harmless as the fairy tales read at children's bedsides. While the one side demands stricter regulation of television, the other side says censorship, and the arguments are back and forth, and this is one area that the three networks have not even come close together on agreeing how much violence to cut out. I must say that violence this past season, 78-79 television viewing season, television was cut out 9% less than it was the year previous. Now that's not much of a cut, since sex went up 27% on television. So what happens usually on the networks is when one thing is reduced, another thing is kicked into high gear that maybe at the time was not as much as what the item that's under criticism. The National Institute of Mental Health has supported a continuing study for the past 9 years to look into the trends in television content and see if there was any relationship between what was seen violently on television and mental illness. The researchers report a remarkably high and stable level of violence over the years studied as they watched television programs after television programs. Violence in this study was defined as the overt expression of physical force against others or self, or the compelling action against one's will or pain of being hurt or killed. I don't know of a study that's been made, but I have heard of one on the East Coast that's been made in the last 6 months, where they are seeing what witnessing murders on television has done to small children. To see what their reactions are when they see someone who has been murdered, blood coming out of the stomach or the head. And it's interesting to point out that from this paper that was done on the East Coast on the study for children who have watch violence on television, is that usually have a bad night's sleep, usually have very severe nightmares, or usually in school the next morning, if you're a public school teacher, you'll notice the child is very disruptive in class. And quite often it can be pinpointed to what was viewed the night before. It's interesting also to note that most of the problems we have on television could be alleviated if parents would take more control over what their children and they themselves watch. As I mentioned a few days ago, I asked a question, how many murders have you witnessed in the past year? in the neighborhood or city or community you live in. Has anyone witnessed one? One in the back. No, I'm not talking about that. No, I assume that you all watch television, see. So that's an assumption. But how would you, if you're the parent of little Susie or Billy, make them home and said, you know, Dad and Mom, I want to go down to McDonald's tonight and watch a murder. Will you permit your child to go? How many would permit your child to go out and witness a murder? But yet, what kind of controls do we put over the same child on television? How many of you have teenagers here? Okay, as your hands go, how many of you monitor what your teenagers watch? One, two, three. By monitoring, what some of you are, okay, most of them. You know, it's interesting on the film industry with the ratings they have that it seems to be a license. If it's R, you know, that they go one level. If it's X, they go another level. If it's G, you know, they're protective in one level. But a lot of times, the ratings do not mean, you know, that they should be looked at unless, as a parent, you want to do a study with your child on something that maybe would be a timely subject, and the, you know, R-rated movie that's on television may very well be helpful for the family to look at. One thing I hope that in the course of these last 3 days that we've taken a look at television awareness, that you do not get the impression that television is bad. I hope that you take and look constructively at what can be done with television. I hope that when you go home, you don't throw your television set out. No, that's not what's needed. What's needed is a monitoring, is an American consumer that will do something about what currently is being done with television. You know, when you think of, yes, attributed to what he is not free from violence. It's interesting also to look at television as a teacher. Several opinion surveys show that television messages influence the attitudes and standards of its viewers. In one survey that was taken recently, adults who watch a lot of TV were more likely to think they would experience violence in their own lives. The more you watch television, the more you think violence is going to come into your life. The less you watch television, the less you feel violence will be part of your life. In other words, watching violence steadily on television makes one think that it's going to happen to me. Black Sunday last fall is a good example. Before the Super Bowl, the same Sunday, same weekend, the television movie Black Sunday was filmed. They had to take, at the Super Bowl, added security, thinking that some crackpot might just try what was on television in real life. And it's interesting also to note that quite often when something is shown on television in a violent order, during that week, there will be numerous cases across our nation of that same type of violence taken out on real life as a net result of what is viewed on television. Over the last few years, a number of real life crimes have been reported in newspapers, which were literally carbon copies of incidents shown on television. One of the most striking examples involved a rash of bomb threats following a TV showing of the Doomsday Flight on NBC. In the film, a man placed a bomb on a passenger airplane, threatening to blow up the plane unless he was paid a large ransom. The airlines are one of the major industries right now that are trying to clamp down on television showing anything to do with hijacking or any violence done to aircrafts. Because the moment it is shown on television, it is attempted either that same night or the next day or succeeding weeks. Before the program, the Doomsday Flight was over, an identical bomb threat was received by one of our largest airlines in our country. Four more similar threats were made in the next 24 hours. By the end of the week, eight more had been received. And after a showing of the same film in Australia, Qantas Airlines were forced to pay $500,000 to a man threatening to blow up a plane with 116 passengers on it. Again, the technique was the same as what was witnessed in the television movie. Perhaps the individuals making the threats were unstable and dangerous people to begin with, but it seems clear that sometimes violent ideas do not have to be placed into unstable or violent people, because it just gives them legalized license to attempt it. Others have had the belief that through a process known as catharsis, television could minimize aggressive tendencies rather than enhance them. Proponents, though, of this stance argue that violence on television screens allows us, as viewers, to vicariously release, as you mentioned in the back, pent-up hostilities. That, you know, if I didn't have this out on television, then I would have all these hostilities inside of me that I have no place to release. Unfortunately, there is no evidence that does support this contention that by watching television, it takes out my aggression. What are some effects of violence? I think there are three things that psychologists and leading experts in television in our country are looking at when violence is on television. And the three are very simple. Number one is changes in attitudes toward aggression. The second is lowered sensitivity to violence. We become a more permissive society. And three, observational learning. It may be you learned it from watching television. Several factors influence the third part, that observational learning. Characteristics of the observer, for example, such as age and personality. And there is no way in which when you see something on television that the producers are well aware that almost all ages will be watching the movie that's out. They hope that you do. For what reason? So that you can do what we were talking about yesterday. So that you can go out and buy the commodity that sponsored this particular program on television. I think once advertising is cleaned up, you'll see violence cleaned up. And really, the one who is promoting the show just wants to make sure that they have 40 million viewers. And that's the important. They don't care whether they're all senior citizens. They don't care whether they're teenagers. They just hope and pray that 40 million will watch it. And therefore, they know their business sales will go up in the same regard as the investment that they have placed in. Now, I think an interesting part in the conclusion of violence, as we move from violence into news, is something that we might ask ourselves. Do we really want violence? How many of you want violence on television? Hold up your hand. How many of you want violence on television? Okay? I'm just saying, you know, violence of any order. How many don't want? Okay, the final and most common cause for TV violence is that the networks are only responding to the viewing preferences of their audiences. Now, interesting, and this was a shocker when I studied a survey here about 2 months ago on the shows of the past season, the biggies. And it's interesting that if we would go by the ratings, the Nielsen ratings, there'd be very little violence on television. There would be very little violence on television if we went by the Nielsen ratings. Because almost all the top shows are comedies, are shows that, you know, have very little or minimum about of violence in them. And all in the family have some violence to one degree or another, put downs all over the place. Question in the back. But I think that violence can be curbed considerably if violence is removed slowly but steadily from television. Go ahead. Well, that's a good question. But I'm not the producer. All I'm the one that's viewing. and seeing what it does to behavior. And sometimes I come up with the question, well, is it really that important that I watch it? Because you always have the good guys and the bad guys. And you know what is going to happen to the bad guys? They're going to get wiped out. And the good guys, they probably will be shot at. But quite often they're missed. And the interesting thing about violence on television, particularly if children of any age view, is that the next evening or the next week, the one who is dead comes back, either as another character or as someone else. So that death for a child is not communicated on television in a positive way. There's always the big question. Could I try that, you know? Like Wonder Woman in that scene you saw, you know, that for a child looking at that, how strong Wonder Woman will be, or Superman, or Batman, and Robin. And just think of the fantasy characters that we have built in the whole area of violence. Question. Programs were made possible by sponsorship of companies whose commercials appear during the programs. And some advertisers, some of the big companies that are spending a lot of money, have recently announced that they will no longer support violent series at all, which is a breakthrough. They will no longer put up money to produce or see that violence is shown on television. Citizen groups can support those companies. They can exert pressure on the networks by writing in complaints. When you see something you don't like, and I'm sure there are quite often during the course of a given week, three or four things that we have see either being previewed on television that we don't like, write about it. Because your writing and your response is what the network needs. Because after all, we are the consumers. Now we are going to shift from violence to news. And as we make this shift, we make it in sort of an uneasy way. Uneasy because we find that quite often violence makes the news. Quite often tragedy makes the news. Quite often things that we would not like to see on television, we see during the news. When we look at the film clip on news, you're going to see some of the familiar shows, and you're going to see some of the familiar characters who are, shall we say, household names, ones who we know very well. Most of what we've been taught to expect from television news has been learned from watching, you name it, television news. What we don't learn about are the tensions which are part of the news system. When a story is to be the lead story for the evening, ABC News. What we don't see is the tension that goes into selecting out of 55 stories which 15 are going to be, or which 12 are we going to talk about tonight. Who makes the decision? Who does the selecting? Who does the editing? The primary tension is between the nature, function, and task of the journalist in society and the growing role, particularly, of the local station level. Most communities now have an hour and a half evening news. Are there some here that have more in your local town? 5 to 7:30. Wow. That's it. I would imagine they must go into the local scene, half an hour for national. When you think of this, you are faced with the question, what is news? The definition of news today are many. One broadcast journalist suggested it is knowing and telling about an event that is of interest to at least one person. That's, you know, a very interesting comment, that it's just so one person's interest, that's news. The more other persons that are interested, the bigger the story. Another defines news as information people receive secondhand about worlds, events, and processes which are not available to their immediate personal level. A good working definition says that it is the responsibility of the journalist to provide us with a picture of the world upon which we can act.
And as one well-known news commentator puts it, that's the way it is. And the question we pose, is it? Is it? It could be that's the way it is for the commentator, but it may not be for us, the viewer. Let us now take a look at the evening news at 20 minutes to 5. Let us look at the various segments of news in television as we view it each and every evening. The only sad thing that I wish when you see clips like this, the course television awareness training, each one of these modules, like television news, is a two-hour module, and everyone has a workbook with 8 modules in it. And you spend 2 hours looking at it in detail, each one of these subjects that we have been scratching the surface of here at Holden Village this past week. And so, if when you get home you would like to inquire about television awareness, I am sure that there is someone in your community. There's not too many on the West Coast, but east of the Mississippi, I don't think you'll have a problem. If you're interested in something like this, I find it's not only a fascination to begin to take a look at what helps can come to the family, and particularly, I think, to the church. Because when we look at some of these news clips that you just witnessed, it brings home a lot of close similarity to violence that we just covered a little earlier. For example, what do I need to know in the evening news about a head being found, and then a body, and then also there was a body without a head found, you know? And what kind of details do we need as viewing public here in America? And I think the amazing thing is that no one has ever discovered what we, this consumer, would like to have for evening news, or morning news, or late night news. I think of one interesting comment on the news that I watch, and I enjoy the news. I watch it probably as regular as some of you do, because I like to see the various kinds of humor that's conducted among the staff that a local network has, particularly in the weather industry for news. Most of the time, very few of the local networks have a meteorologist licensed and knowledgeable. Normally, it is a woman, very attractive, or a man, who is also quite attractive too, who really doesn't know whether the West Coast is here or the East Coast is there. And during the course of their giving you the news, they must interject humor. And they must interject it to a point that weather can be humorous. And I don't know, you know, quite often I think that they do kind of a bad job. I do think with our satellites over us now, letting us know pictures of our weather, it gives us a very accurate screening to what's going on. But the commentary, I find, is most interesting. In San Francisco several years ago, the television audience heard the top-rated local newsman on ABC say at 10 o'clock in the evening on your news, a male organ has been found beside a railroad track in Oakland. Details in 1 hour. When quizzed about the incident, a network documentary on tabloid news broadcasted by CBS TV, the newsman said there had been violent crimes in the area and there must have been a victim, concluding with the statement, "We didn't cut it off and put it there." When you stop and think of sometimes the news that is conducted and you analyze what's going on, you begin to wonder, you really wonder, what kind of qualifications as well as what kind of trivia the networks are getting by on labeling it news. One assumption you saw early, Nixon love letters. There was really not too much proof when you listened to it closely. And Jimmy Carter's teeth. News? You really want to know about his teeth? How many here? I mean, I think there's some things that we must have a little private.
But the news has a way of getting inside and, you know, feeling that they've got a scoop. What are some characteristics of television news? The task of the TV journalist is also made difficult by a number of characteristics of television news. Some are peculiar to the network and to the local news. These characteristics are common to both. Have you ever wondered how news is selected for you to view? Usually it is selected for us under the following characteristics. Visual values are given priority over real news values. In other words, if it makes a good picture, that's news. If it doesn't, it's in the category of, if we have nothing else to put on tonight, we'll put it. The question is often asked, is there good footage? Do you have a good picture? It could be a very good news story, but if there was not a good picture, it will be probably not seen. The tradition of the scoop, aided by the instant reporting ability. In some cities now, they have what they call the CAM, the team that's out there all hours of the day, searching for news. How many of your cities have a team that's going all over town, searching for news? Watch our channel, because this is where news happens. Now, if you want news, turn in to Channel 37. Building audience is often in the minds of the news staff. The television ladder. If you notice, the man commentator and the woman commentator in one of the clips were kind of firing things back to them. Well, nice to have you back. You know, kind of this real-life situation, making us feel a little bit better. Events, particularly ongoing social processes, are fragmented. There's no time to research for background information, which would set the story in perspective. Minor stories with strong visual action share equal time with the biggies. Sometimes minor stories have more time on television than the big stories do. And there's another one. Charles Perrault, known for his being on the road quite often and giving us a good commentary as he travels around on CBS for 8 years, spoke to some people a few months ago, and he said, and I quote, "I have a lot of time, and I spend a lot of time watching local news on television out there as I'm on the road. My overwhelming impression of all those hours in all those years that I have been on the road is of the news person's hair. Anchorman's hair, anchor lady's hair. Hair carefully styled and sprayed, hair neatly parted, hair abundant, and every single hair in place. Next time you look at your evening news, look at your anchor person. Neatly groomed, particularly the hair. I remember the style," Charles Kralt goes on, "but not the substance. And I fear the reason may be there wasn't much substance there. I like the news because I enjoy looking at the anchor person. I recognize that an anchor man can be as brilliant as well as beautiful, and that some are. I don't care what station managers say. I don't care what the outside professional news advisors say. I don't care what the ratings say. I say this is the continuing disgrace of the profession, that you must be well-groomed to be the anchor person, every hair in place, rather than checking into the content of what is the news. The plain truth is that in a society which depends on its life on an informed citizenry, and in which most citizens receive most of their information from television, millions are getting that life-giving information from a man or a woman whose colleagues wouldn't trust to accurately report on his or her afternoon round of golf." That's from Charles Carroll. I think we all ought to be ashamed that 25 years in the television age, so many of our anchor persons on the evening news haven't any basis on which to make a news judgment. They can't edit, they can't write, and they can't even cover a story. Question in the back. Networks together spend $150 million a year on television and radio news. A lot of stories are bought that go on news. And a lot of people are paid to be on news too. Walter Cronkite did have an interesting comment, and I quote him in saying that when one of the anchor people on one of the other channels was paid $1 million contract for 5 years, that ruined the news commentator on national television. And perhaps you know who that person who gets $1 million a year didn't last very long as an anchor person. She now is a traveling on the road around the world person, Barbara Walters. Now, Walter Cronkite said this not out of sour grapes, but that, you know, to make $1 million a year to give you the news is a whale of a lot. He would not, on the one hand, though, reveal his salary. And at the local case station, there is a strong pressure for increased or continued high profitability. The station sales staff says, in effect, give us a news program we can get out there and sell. New equipment, such as the electronic news gathering cameras, which transmit live pictures from most locations. You know, we live in a day and age of highly technical electronic video work. With these action cars going around, they can do anything almost immediately. Today, we live in a society that, you know, what goes on in Namibia, South Africa, no doubt the same day that it's happening. We live in a day and age in which things are happening so fast, but, and I think here's where Paul Wee suggested, is all the news that we're receiving truthful? Do we really know, is it well documented, that the story that is beamed nationwide with 40 to 65 million viewers, is it the truth? When you have a line story of maybe 30 seconds. And I think since I've been up here and listened to some of the lectures and some of the commentary that Paul Wee has mentioned about news, it makes me wonder now when you hear Marxist guerrillas, what would happen if all of a sudden we challenge the media, say Lutheran guerrillas in Africa, and call it the way it is? But we don't. We live in a free country. There are a lot of freedoms that you and I enjoy. And one of the freedoms we have is the freedom to watch television. Hopefully, you'll use that freedom not to destroy yourself, but that you'll use that freedom to help build up your family and others of our citizens in our country. I feel very strongly that the church has been far too silent in the area of, you know, free time viewing. Why couldn't the church in our world today be more actively involved in programming, not on television, but programming in the church, things for our young to do so that idle time is not wasted by watching television? Why can't we, in our society, develop a counter system to the time that is spent in front of the television set? Most of our homes have Bibles in them, and most of our homes have television sets in them. And I'm not lying. I'm not pulling one of Nixon's lines. I hope I'm telling the truth, that I think quite often in most of our homes, the television is far more used daily than the Bible. And I would hope that maybe we who are of the family of Jesus Christ, that we can begin to take a look, serious look, at how we can help make television much better to view, as well as use our idle time and do some other things too.